if no candidate has a majority on the first ballot, I believe that you should only choose from a person who has actually participated in the primary. Count me out. I simply believe that if you want to be the nominee for our party, to be the president, you should actually run for it. I chose not to do this. I just think it would be wrong to go any other way. So let me say again, I am not going to be our party's nominee.
He said that 10 different ways, too.
We played that whole thing. There were a lot of other places where we could have stopped that. We played that whole thing because you need to hear him continue to say no, no, no.
I said no.
No, I really mean no. This time for sure, no.
No, no, no. Period.
Brett Baer, Fox News Channel. Does he mean no?
Well, he said he didn't want to be House Speaker either.
Excellent point.
Yeah, I do think that this is a no. I think he was getting a lot of pressure from his own caucus and, guys, representatives saying, hey, boss, what's going on here? Are you with us or are you running for president? And frankly, he went overseas and was getting bombarded by foreign leaders saying, are you the guy? After all these news stories, and he felt compelled to say this. What was interesting, Ro, was that he said it should be someone who put their hat into the ring. Well, guess what? I mean, that leaves 17 possibilities, not just three who are still running.
Yeah. But didn't he also say win a state, though? Where did I hear
no.
that? No. He didn't say that? Oh, that's interesting.
just participate in a primary, not necessarily win a primary.
Oh, yeah. No.
I mean, he got in the race. He actually ran some. I mean, they ran something and ran for something, and even if they stopped running. You look at Rubio. He's got 171 delegates. John Kasich has 143.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going to happen? All I know is that the going bet is that it's either Trump or Cruz. But on the outside chance that it's not, Paul Ryan is saying it should be one of the original 17. And then you're looking at all kinds of people. You're looking at Scott Walker. You're looking at Rick Perry. You're looking at Carly Fiorina. You're looking at all kinds of folks.
Wow, Rick Perry.
Bring him back.
You know what's funny about that, though, is that there are party regulars who are like, Rick Perry should be the guy. And I find that because Rick Perry crashed and burned in one of the most dramatic ways ever 4 years ago, right? By forgetting his top three things he was going to do, losing that.
Never go with the list.
Yeah.
No, just say, here's some things.
I do that as a parent sometimes. I have three things to tell you, and you're like, it's so mad. And you're like, oh, man, I forgot the
third. Oh, my God, is that true? Don't have – yeah, there's no reason to have a list. So the I guess what we take from this is that this is so wide open.
It is.
It could almost be anybody. Now, Kasich – I know – now, Kasich's people – were out talking to, I think it was CNN yesterday, somewhere. I don't know, I saw one of those, but maybe it might have been your guys, talking about what their strategy is and how they see the strategy unfolding for them. And that is that after the second vote, they believe, after the first vote, Trump doesn't win, all right, so then they go back and everybody starts doing all the arm twisting they possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
Kasich is already on the ground arm twisting people saying, hey, listen, if we get to the second vote, come for me. And then he's got a strategy for as many votes as they go that it may take three or four, but by then he will have amassed this in terms of pressuring certain delegates to come on over.
You're also seeing a lot of high-placed Republicans seem to be talking about how they're for none of the above, meaning the three candidates really are not who they want. You saw Speaker Boehner talk about that. It set a lot of people talking, saying, if we don't have a nominee who wins on the first ballot, I'm for none of the above. And it feels like there are all these deals being cut now to try to figure out how do we move forward without any of these three becoming
Listen, also in the list of 17, Jeb Bush.
Right.
And
Laura Bush
Low Energy Jeb could make an appearance at the convention and be a consensus candidate potentially. But the problem is that to get a consensus candidate, you have to get some of the Cruz and the Trump people to sign on because they're the majority of the delegates, right?
Yeah.
Now, the Cruz people are not going to be ready for Jeb. And so you have to think of who is the person that would unify them if it's not one of those two. What's crazy is that there are no rules yet. The rules get set up the week before the convention. And anything can happen with these delegates. There are no rules about what you can give them, what you can give them in return for their support.
Right.
I mean, Ted Donald Trump could give each delegate $20,000 and say, be with me. And there's no rule against that.
Well, does it have to be reported, though, Brett, if they do that? Or is
it has to be reported, but there's no rule against it happening.
Well, not a rule at the moment, right? Could they they could create a rule for that.
They could. There has not been ever in a convention a rule that says
this will be good year.
Any restrictions on what the delegates can or cannot get. Now, is it a great news story that you are paying for your delegates? No, that would be not a great news story, but it's not against the rules.
Mm. Now, this other piece that has been tried to be kind of walked back and reworked, where one of the Trump surrogates, this guy that had been in the Nixon White House as well as a few other places over the years, Roger Stone is his name. He's a political operative. He was on that HBO series a couple of times. Showtime series, The Circus, a couple of times. He was the one that said, listen, if these delegates don't go the way they were supposed to go, we'll give the names of the delegates to other people and then they can go visit them in their hotel rooms or whatever that was. And he was saying, listen, there's nothing wrong with lobbying. But then there was also this concept that, because, the delegates pay for their own hotel rooms, that Trump might, if they don't do their job well, he may not pay for their hotel room when they get their travel expenses. That's one of those things. Technically you could have a guy pay for the travel expenses and then they go, well, I got to vote for this, otherwise I can't get out of town. I mean, that's what you get when you've got a guy who doesn't really have a ground organization but a ton of money who's going to try to, win this anyway.
I was going on the incentive side. You're going on the
pressure
side. The carrot side.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you're right, and you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I think Roger Stone has been lambasted from even Trump supporters for saying all he said about we'll make sure everybody knows where the hotel rooms are. That is sounding like, boy, it'd be a shame if your little convention in Cleveland got messed up there.
Let me tell you something. There's a single law enforcement agency in America that would not consider that to be an active threat if that were brought to them, if somebody were threatening a president or something and said something like that, they would go, yeah, well, that sounds like a threat to me. So I just the whole thing. I mean, that is the most amazing part of this, is that this whole year, and we can't say it enough. We'll never say it enough. We are going to tell our great, 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 great grandchildren, shall we live long enough, about this year. And this is what we covered, and you can't believe what it was like. And this is just another example of it.
And you can only imagine what the convention will be like, as you just pointed out, Brett, all the things that could be happening there.
And we're going to be steeped in all of these rules. We're going to be probably posted up there in Cleveland for the week before. So you hear every minute detail of every rule, and it's going to be really important. It's going to be much like I covered Tallahassee in the recount, when every little thing about every little ballot and butterfly ballot made a difference, how some obscure court down in South Florida ruled. All of that is going to be like in the arcane rules of the RNC convention. Very important news.
And they'll sue. Someone will sue somebody. And they'll try to take it to, even though there's no constitutional reality or legal reality to this. This is an intramural business decision. This is an organization and how they choose to make their own rules. But you could have them. You could have somebody run around and scream that they got cheated, and therefore that they have damages. Now Trump is the guy to do that, right? Because he's always threatening to sue people. Here are the damages. I should have been president of the United States, and he can sue for whatever. What does the president make? $400,000 a year, I think it is, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He can sue for $1.6 million in lost salary. Because that would have been his.
What about pain and
damages.
Suffering? Can you get that?
Plus pain and suffering, yes. And loss of the enjoyment of living. He could have all of that.
His life would probably be more enjoyable not being in the presidency.
That would be if I were on the other side of that lawsuit, that's what I would argue.
Exactly right. Let me just say one more thing.
Yes,
a story that you're going to hear about down the road,
okay,
if not more this week. The 60 Minutes piece about the 28 pages of allegedly tying to the Saudis in some way, shape, or form the funding of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Was in 60 Minutes this past weekend. You're going to hear more and more and more about that as we get further along. We have a piece on it tonight, but it is going to be an explosive story. The president's traveling to Saudi Arabia next week.
Now, I have a question about the timing of this, because this is curious to me. I saw it on I talked about this a little bit yesterday. Saw it on Sunday night. I know that there was just a delegation in Saudi of congressmen, Republican congressmen specifically, led by Lindsey Graham, a congressional delegation, so congressmen and senators. And there is this talk. Even the president has referred to Saudi as being a bit of a free rider on some of the things that we do in the Middle East to try to keep the stability without paying into it. Donald Trump obviously wants to charge them for their security or give them a nuclear weapon or, you know, whatever. I can't remember what his plan was. But it does seem to me that there is mounting pressure here. And my guess is that Trump blundered into it. But there are other things, maybe because he's heard about other kinds of levers that the United States wishes to put, and it seems fairly bipartisan, on Saudi Arabia for some reason. And the fact that that the redacted 28 pages of the 9/11 report that had to do with Saudi Arabia and the potential for Saudi Arabian citizens there, highly placed,
and maybe even agents of the government.
Right. Highly placed people in Saudi Arabia aiding and abetting the 9/11 hijackers at some level here in the United States. The fact that they released that is interesting to me. Now, I know that's in the hands of civil lawyers because there's a lawsuit going.
There's a lawsuit that 2,000 9/11 families being represented in this case, trying to get those 28 pages released, trying to have Saudi Arabia for their case to go to court and Saudi Arabia to be the defendant in the court.
Right.
They have cited sovereign immunity and have so far won in the courts, but there is a bill in the Senate that is pending and the White House has been pushing back on and trying to get them to stop. It's called JASTA, the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act, and it would compel countries that have any connection to sponsoring terrorists acts from 9/11 on to appear in U.S. court.
Well, it's going to be interesting. And so you're wondering, where does this actually end? Because this seems to be happening ex parte of the election. And it doesn't seem like anything can in Washington happen outside the election, but
there are ties to the election, obviously. There are ties. I mean, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton filed an amicus brief with the court on behalf of the Saudis. So you're going to hear a lot more about this.
Wow.
And when you start to talk about 9/11 families and the emotion surrounding the 9/11 attacks, mm-hmm. and the fact that, frankly, our country is a little emboldened by the price of gas and the less reliant we are on the Middle East when it comes to oil, I think you're going to hear a lot about this story, and that's why
my sense is that Fox News has a blockbuster coming up here.
I'm guessing that too. I'm hearing that.
I know too much about it. Yeah.
It's a fascinating topic, and you know, you're right. It could be central in the election, and probably something we should learn more about.
Well, it's going to, and it's also, let's just not forget, and we'll end on this note, is that in the Middle East, you know, Saudi Arabia has been a very, very, you know, they're the kingdom on the hill. They've got a bunch of the very most important sites of Islam. They have they are Wahhabists. I think, is that the proper nounization of it? They're Wahhabists. They're people who are very strict adherents to their version of Sunni Islam, and it is it's a place, and it's very wealthy, and it has been very influential in its own kind of weird way, right? It's not.
And it's been a strong ally for us on the other side for a long time. But there's no doubt, Ro, that the core of radical Islamic terrorism comes from Saudi Arabia and Wahhabi culture.
Yeah. So what goes on there? All right. Well, we'll find out more. Brett, we'll see you tonight at 5 o'clock on the Fox News channel, won't we?
We'll see you.
Thank you.
Brett.
Thanks, Brett.